Hey, this is a podcast brought to you by Macleans.ca, the destination for the national conversation. Thanks for listening.
Neil Borofsky is an adjunct professor of law and senior research fellow at NYU School of Law. He was previously the Special United States Treasury Department Inspector General to oversee the Troubled Assets Relief Program, or TARP, from 2008 until his resignation in March 2011. We're here today in his office at NYU Law, and thanks very much for sitting down with us.
My pleasure.
In an article for Bloomberg in July, you pointed out that since the crisis, the top U.S. banks are 23% larger and control 52% of all industry assets. In that case, you know, is the system more vulnerable than it was in 2007? And if so, what went wrong in your view?
You know, a lot of the things that were broken in our financial system that helped create the massive financial crisis from which we're still recovering are still in place, and in some ways, as you just noted, have actually gotten more severe.
In your article for The New Republic on the recent HSBC ruling, you write that the Department of Justice should probably force the largest banks to break up if their size and systemic importance insulates them from criminal charges in a given legal proceeding. However, HSBC is ostensibly a British bank. Wouldn't this approach be impracticable for international institutions without some sort of international cooperation or arrangement?
Look, I mean, I think a bank... I mean, I was being a bit tongue-in-cheek with my recommendation, to a certain extent, with the foreign banks. And this is... But the complaint that HSBC made, the threat that they made, is one that is repeated every time there's an investigation into one of the largest financial institutions, whether domestic or international. And it's a true... It's a true, actual threat. And it goes like, if you indict us... there is a chance that we will go under, and if we go under, we're so big and so interconnected, we're going to take the entire financial system down with us. And again, that is not a sustainable system. That that will incentivize institutions to commit crimes, to make more the rule of law. So we have to come up with a solution. Whether it's practical, sure it's practical, because again, you're not, the Department of Justice wouldn't be forcing the bank to break itself up. Department of Justice would be saying, look, we're going to indict you unless you break yourself up. And if you want to make the decision to break yourself up, go for it. Or maybe that bank makes a decision that they don't want to do business in the United States of America anymore. And they you know, take steps like that, which might be acceptable to the Department of Justice. But giving a bank a slap on the wrist of a penalty worth a couple of weeks' earnings without punishing them for having committed that type of crime, solely because of their size and status, should be unacceptable to the department. And I think, you know, they should use whatever tools they have to prevent that from happening again. Otherwise, the incentives are going to be all lined up in the wrong direction.
To segue a little bit into an area that might fall a little bit out of your expertise, I just wondered if you could extrapolate a little bit based on the experiences you had to the situation or the scenario in Canada. We have a more concentrated banking system than the United States. Our five biggest banks control around 85% of total industry assets. Last October, Moody's placed those firms on notice for a possible future downgrade, citing high consumer debt and elevated housing prices. We've had a very rapid appreciation in housing prices in Canada over the last few years. In light of these facts, should Canadians perhaps be more open to looking more carefully at our own system?
Yeah, I don't know enough about the Canadian banking system, but that sounds awfully concentrated. Because the bottom line is that if the banks and the markets believe that a bank will be bailed out by their government, the normal laws and rules of capitalism don't apply, and that gives them incentives to take on more and more risk, knowing that they'll be able to profit if the risks pay off, and if they don't, well, hey, it's not them that's bearing the cost, it's going to be the taxpayers. One area of what I would advocate, and I think what's necessary for the United States, is to break up the largest banks. And here in this country, we don't need banks as big and as interconnected and as massive as the ones that we have. You know, the second path that perhaps Canada is trying to do is to make them more like utilities. You know, extremely heavily regulated utilities where the government is making sure that they're not amassing unreserved and unprotected and undercapitalized risks.
On a similar note, in 2008, the Canadian government stepped in to backstop Canadian interbank lending, but not because our banks were insolvent, but rather to level the playing field, quote-unquote, as all their international competitors had government support as well. In that sort of scenario, can the world's largest banks be decoupled from implicit or explicit government support, and should they be? If so, would some sort of agreement or consultation be needed at the international level?
The race to the bottom of bailouts is certainly something we saw in 2008, where every country stood behind the banks that there was concern that the failure would help tear down the nation. I personally think that the justification that we're doing it because everyone else is doing it, standing alone, is not a terribly persuasive one. I think in a financial market, if you look at a bank that doesn't need to be bailed out, or a country's bank that don't need bailouts, those banks may be more attractive in a normal, functioning, happy, capitalistic market, the ones that are backed by a host country. Those types of banks are going to be more efficient, they're going to be smarter, they're going to take fewer risks. They may not have the same level of profits, but that's only because they're not enjoying the same subsidy that the large banks get because of this implicit or explicit backing. But over time, a free market with a non-subsidized industry is probably going to do better and have to do better than a subsidized one.
What lessons can Canadian financial regulators learn from the American experience in 2008? And if you can think of any, what might American regulators learn from the Canadian one?
I think one of the great lessons that we should learn from 2008 is we have a deep problem of regulatory capture in this country, of regulators who are serving the interests of the financial institutions and not who that they're supposed to be regulating on behalf of, which is the American taxpayer. There's a number of reasons for that, but part of it here is because of the revolving door. You have that the heads of the agencies often come from Wall Street institutions that they're supposed to be regulating, and often the regulators themselves leave government to go take much higher paying jobs on Wall Street. And this creates a sense of ideological capture. When you come, when what I saw in Washington is that when these individuals came from these institutions, they brought all of their Wall Street ideology with them, which led people like Tim Geithner, who didn't come from Wall Street but was surrounded by them, to really believe that they were being the most transparent folks ever, who would knock down ideas like you should tell us what you're doing with the TARP dollars as being impractical or unrealistic or something that shouldn't be done. I saw that time and time again, this lack of concern about fraud because of this inherent trust in their former employers. But second, it incentivizes bad regulation. If a reward for a regulator for pulling their punches and pleasing the institutions that we're regulating is a high-paying job on Wall Street or the Canadian equivalent of Wall Street, that's not going to be a good incentive on behalf of the taxpayers and the regular people who are supposed to benefit from effective regulation. So I don't know if it's appropriate for Canada, but that is certainly one of the most important lessons that I draw from the last crisis.
Okay. Well, those are all of our questions, and I really appreciate you sitting down to talk with us. Thanks very much.
Thank you.